This episode of the Steve Des Island Podcast is brought to you by t-shirtvisions.com. The website t-shirtvisions.com has all the crazy t-shirts you are waiting for. So if you're looking for a comical t-shirt, go to t-shirtvisions.com. They have 25% discounts off your order with selected items. Check out their best-selling t-shirt, Only You Can Prevent Baby Daddies, along with other funny, humorous t-shirts, hoodies, and etc. More stuff there. So go and check it out at t-shirtvisions.com. This podcast is also brought to you by idea.effectiveremedies.net. Free video reveals how to brand new marketing idea generated over 710,000 profit in the first 28 days without a website, product, selling, or convincing. The entire system is revealed in the video. So go to www.idea.effectiveremedies.net to discover it. This will be the most important video you've seen this year. Go now to www.idea.effectiveremedies.net. This podcast is also brought to you by fcash.com. Servicios de publicidad en línea, ofreciendo a sus anunciantes, publicistas o coordinadores la oportunidad de anunciar sus negocios y de ganar dinero. 6 veces en ingresos sus gastos publicitarios, sin límites tantas veces como lo quieran, en toda legalidad. Y para los que lo desean, crear su agencia publicitaria online y a bajo coste y con una alta rentabilidad para una estrategia eficaz de comercialización local y con potencial de desarrollo global por nuestros socios. Se ha tomado la mejor decisión analizando tiempo y esfuerzo. Hemos elegido el programa de marketing de matrices cerradas con alto retorno económico. Para más, vaya a www.f-cash.com. Es www.f-cash.com. This episode of the Steve Des Island Podcast is also brought to you by ingresospasivos.wnegocios.com. Si necesitas un método que te permita ganar dinero, aun y cuando no te encuentres trabajando activamente, el libro Cómo Generar Ingresos Pasivos de Steve Pavlina y Jesús Guerrero te mostrará cómo construir sistemas automatizados para la generación de ingresos pasivos. Y todo lo que necesitas saber sobre este increíble método que te pondrá en el camino correcto hacia tu libertad financiera. Este libro es uno de los más vendidos en la categoría de emprendimiento en Amazon.com. Encuentra mucho más información sobre el libro en el siguiente sitio web. ingresospasivos.wnegocios.com. Es ingresospasivos.wnegocios.com.
All right, guys, you ready to get this podcast started? Because I am so ready. Let's go.
You are now listening to the Steve Des Island Podcast. Get ready for some tropical conversations and some refreshing guests. Now, here's Steve Des.
Daily got nothing to do with rap. Check the facts, expose those cats. Who poses heroes, take advantage of blacks. Your government's gangsters will cut the crap. A
war going on. Just like that.
Cause great responsibility F the police. Who's stopping you from killing me? Disaster's fiascos are looped by P.E. If it's I instead of we believe in TV. Spreading rich adventures. This new thing about snitches. Watch the masses move as the masses switches. System distant but barely missed her. My soul intends to save my brothers and sisters. Get up.
So 20 years later, of course it does while consciousness faded. New generations believe in them fables. Gangsta boogie on two turntables. So no love, so it's easy to hate it. Desecrated while the current awaited. Any given Sunday, so where y'all reigning? With slavery, lynching, and them drugs infiltrated. I'm like that doll Chucky, baby. Keep coming back to live, love life like I'm crazy. Keep it moving, rising to the top. Duck first, clean living, you don't stop. Revolution means change, don't look at me strange. So I can't repeat what other rappers be saying. If you don't stand for something, you fall for anything. Harder than you think is a beautiful thing. Get up!
Chuck, man, that's what you gotta do. You got to tell them just like that. time to leave you a preview so you too can review what we do. 20 years in this business, how you sell soul, she wins.
What is going on, people? Steve Dez here. Steve Dez here. I'm here in the building. I'm here with y'all, people. I'm here. I'm back. Steve Dez, I'm back with a brand new Steve Dez Allen podcast. The podcast where I bring people during the week, not like today, but during the week I try to bring people, you know, that are working people in the industry, you know, and they do acting and they do all this stuff. But this is supposed to be a Sunday episode. I got delayed because of various reasons that I'm going to explain. But I'm here with a brand new Steve Dez solo podcast with y'all to keep you up to speed with a lot of things that have been happening, in particular my life. It's something very important. You know, it took me a long time because it's been since last podcast, it's been probably a week and a half. So it's been a long time since I've been doing a podcast, and it's because of a lot of reasons. And let me start this podcast by just saying I want to give a massive shout out to the people at the Ice House in Pasadena. Last Sunday, you guys fucking rocked, man. You guys gave me absolutely life just by being there, being such a fun crowd, and it was such a great time, man. I think absolutely almost every single comedian had an amazing time there. I'm not gonna lie, there were a couple of comedians that ate dick that just went there and bombed. But it just like one or two. But the lineup was a pretty big lineup. It was like about 10, 12 comedians. And the majority rocked it, man. 95% of them rocked it. And it was a really fun crowd, man. I just enjoyed it. And I want to give a massive shout out to Pasadena for having one of the best comedy clubs in America. I got to say it. It's one of my favorite clubs, at least. It's such a fun club. I like to play a game with my friends. Last night, I went to a friend of mine said, "Hey, you want to go to a premiere?" I'm like, "Okay, let's go." And we went to UCLA, and we played a game that it was like, guess your buddy's age. Because, you know, when you have friends and you don't really ask your friend, like, "Yo, how old are you?" Not really. Like, you just hang out with a lot of people and they introduce you to more people and more people and more people. But there's a moment in that friendship when you guys are just riding a car and you guys just ask each other, "Hey, what's your age?" "Oh my, what? You're what? You're 30? Oh my God. What, you're 50? Oh my God." Like, you start just asking stupid questions like that. You know, my friends revealed all their ages and stuff. And I like to play a game that when they ask me, I like to ask them, guess, just so I know what age they think I am. I wasn't really surprised with their answers. They all said what I expected them to say. And they each said pretty much, like, just based on looks, young, around the 20, early 20s. Age range, but they say just the way I carry myself and my personality and the way I am, they say like 30 something and all that. And I'm actually, I said it in the podcast many times, actually my birthday was a couple weeks ago, like 2-3 weeks ago. I'm actually 22 years old, so I am extremely young. But one of the reasons why I think I'm so in a way wise, I'm stupid in many ways, but in many other ways, I'm really wise. And it's because I always hung out when I was 5 years old, I will hang out with people that were 10 year olds. When I was 10, I will hang out with people that are 15 year olds. I will always hang out. I will try to hang out, not purposely, but in a way, yeah, with people older than me so I can learn from their mistakes and I can just do better. I tend to see like people in particular in my age range in particular sometimes, not everybody, again, everybody's different,
But some people in my particular age range seem to be a little in things that I already did 10 years ago or things like that, because I'm always looking to do forward and looking to do better and brighter things. And that's the reason I think I guess I had to be more mature in life. But then I started thinking about my life in various aspects, and I gotta take water. So, just quick water. And I was thinking a lot about my life in particular. I had a lot of thinking to do this past week and a half. And here is where I go about what exactly happened. Last week I did a podcast. You guys can hear it back again. I think it was called Steve Dez, and the title was The Takeoff, where I was talking about basically how I was failing in many ways in maybe 2013 and all those things. And I just, you know, became, I'm now taking off, doing better moves and brighter moves. And that night that I did that podcast, it was Super Bowl night. And after that night, I went and I had a set at Flappers Comedy Club, which the show actually got canceled. And because people were watching the Super Bowl and stuff, so it was just comedians. I ended up still getting the room from them, and I did a set, and everybody did a set, and we went home happy. And then afterwards, I got into a car accident. Basically, a drunk driver hit me, and you know, I basically died for a couple seconds, if anything. But you know, then I came to life now because I'm here. It's a scary feeling, but in a way I wasn't scared. And I know for a lot of you that's gonna sound weird, but that's why I also think my friends and the way I carry myself as well, it's more like a older person. And it's because I've been through a lot of stuff in life, a lot of stuff. And I just realized this, that there might have been more ways. This is the only ones I can't remember. I basically been through a series of things in between my entire life, you know, that I've been basically in the face of death, like right there, right in front. So for somebody that has never had something like this happen ever before, they would probably be absolutely scared out of their mind. They would probably be like, I will never drive again or whatever it is. Even though, like, literally a drunk driver hit me. So I was completely, like, doing everything right and all that. I wasn't scared or anything. And again, this comes from everything that I've been through in life. And that's why I want to dedicate specifically this podcast to talk about how, in many ways, I overcame things or just got lucky. You guys be the judge of it. I'm just going to tell you what happened. And basically, I've been thinking of many things that have happened in my life, and I've survived many, many different things. Things that people will say, it's impossible, you're going to die, I don't know how the hell that happened. But this is what happened. I had, I had to take a quick water break. My first job ever was working with my dad. I was about, who knows what age I was. I was probably 8, 9, 10, some age like that. I was really young, but young enough to do things. You know, not like dumb, just cartoons. No, like I was actually working and doing things. And I was working for my dad. My dad had a little shop that he would repair any electronic things. And I think that's why I'm really into like electronics and things. Because he used to fix anything, basically computers, Super Nintendos, PlayStations, anything, microwaves. Like he will fix it, or he will find a way to fix it. And he had his little store that he will, you know, sell accessories, sell car stuff, and fix things. And basically, one day I was working there. I was basically the receptionist. I would take people's orders and write them up and just pass them forward to them or enter in the computer, things like that. That was my job, and greet the customer and all that. And basically, the customer, there was one time that two guys came in there, and they say, "Hey, I want to check your speakers. I want to check like what you guys got." And I'm like, "Okay, yeah. Well, we got those speakers that you see there on display, and we got some in the back as well that I think are not in display, but the ones that are better are the ones here." And he's like, "Oh, I like the ones here in the bottom. Can I see those?" And I'm like, "Well, this thing is locked. I don't have the key, and my father has the key, but I'll have to go get him and stuff." "Yeah, go get him. And like, I went and I said, "Hey, that, whatever." And he came in front. He's like, "Oh, we want those speakers down there." And as soon as he opens the display to go get the speakers are right like below. They're like bottom shelf, right? So he goes and picks them up. And as soon as that is happening, that my dad's bending over and doing that, the guys jump the counter and like hit my dad, and they grab me and they put a gun in my head. And they start saying like, "Give me all the money. I'm going to shoot this motherfucker right here." And basically my dad, you know, he opens the register and he's like, "That's all I have." And he literally like had like maybe $100 there, or like almost nothing there. And, he's like, there has to be more. So they're like, we're going to shoot him. And, they just start basically parading me around, like, you know, they kind of shoot me. Right. And at this point, you know, it's my first experience ever, and I'm there. I'm scared. I'm crying, but not as much as I would think I was gonna cry. Like I cried a lot right at the moment, and then I like stopped because I know if I keep whining, I could be dead just from my whining. And I'm a kid this time, and my dad just starts, you know, trying to look for scrapes, anything he could find to like give this guy. But he's like, "Literally, I don't have anything else. This is all I have. What do you want? You want to take broken TVs with you? TVs that I'm in the process of fixing? Like, I don't have anything." And my sister was actually in the back, because in the back we had like a little, not like one of those beds that you plug in and they like, you know, air just makes the bed like, whoo, one of those mattresses, air mattresses. We had one of those and like a small TV, and that's where my sister was watching TV. And they go in the back and they flash me basically with held at gunpoint and go like, "Don't you make a move," and blah, blah, blah. And my sister just starts immediately crying. Then they say, they tell my sister to get in the bathroom. So they got her in the bathroom. Then they put me in the bathroom and they're like, you know, parading around my dad now. And, they basically, at the end, put my dad also in the bathroom. They say, don't move, whatever, blah, blah. And then we hear like the door slam. So, my sister stays in the bathroom. Me and my dad go out to see anything, and they left. They're not there anymore. So that was the end of that story. And then afterwards, I remember that same day. Of course, my dad reports to the police and does all this stuff, and I go home. And when I'm home, I'm walking outside by the neighborhood, and there were a couple kids outside that I used to play with. And I walk around there. I'm like, you won't believe what happened to me just now. Literally that same day. I'm a kid, and I'm talking with those kids. And they're like, what happened to you? I'm like, I was working on my dad's store. And two guys came, and they put a gun. And they held me at gunpoint. They put a gun on me and stuff. And, like, we start panicking. I explained the whole story to them. And then at the end, they go, how do you feel? Like, how do you feel right now? Like, what's going on with you? Like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. And I mean, how do you feel? I'm like, I feel fucking awesome. and basically, that's all I said. I literally said, I feel fucking awesome. And the reason I said that, I can only say it's because it felt great that I was in a moment that I was going to lose my life. I didn't necessarily panic to the way I thought I was going to panic. And I held my cool, and I'm still alive. You know, at the end, what you want is to be alive. And that's why I said, like, oh, I felt awesome. It felt great just because I'm here. I'm not gone. I'm here with you guys. I'm actually telling you the story. And, yeah, man, it's crazy. It's just crazy that I'm even able to, you know, say such a thing, that I'm here talking with you guys. And that was just the first experience that I thought was going to be my only experience, that whenever I write a book anytime, that was going to be the experience of, like, I was held on gunpoint, basically. And then, well, not then, sort of then, yeah, then, eventually, my mom and my dad, they got divorced, and, they were always, like, with each other, then not with each other, then with each other, and now with each other, and then with each other, and now with each other. The thing is, my dad used to be really abusive. He was an abusive person. When I was growing up in the household, and basically me as a kid, and I see this, they're divorced, but then they're together, and they're not back together, and they're together, and then I'm back together, and I just see this rhythm that it doesn't look good, you know. It's just this constant nonsense. I go up to my mom and I'm like, what is happening? Why are you guys getting together, and why are you guys not getting together, and why are you guys doing this? Why is this happening constantly? And my mom says, listen, Steve, you might be too young to understand this, but basically, I believe that kids should be raised with both parents. You should be raised with a mom, you should be raised with a dad. And I'm trying my best to make it work with your dad. And you know how your dad is. And it's really tough to work with him sometimes. And yeah, you know. And I'm like, listen, Mom. Dad is a fucking dick. He is. I'm paraphrasing the fuck out of this. As a kid, I would not talk like this. This is the way I talk now. But I say, Mom, listen, why are you letting him hit you and hit my sister and hit me and do all these things? You know, like, you don't deserve that. You don't deserve that. I don't deserve that. We don't deserve this. It's okay. It's okay. I don't need him necessarily, like, you know, all the time here. It's unhealthy. He needs time off. He needs to cool off. He needs to be on his corner. And I just don't want to see this anymore. And as soon as my mom heard that from me, the kid of the family, I'm the only guy, the son and the kid. I'm the kid of the baby of the family. She understood that, damn, like, yeah, like, I'm stupid. Not I'm stupid, but, like, you know, like, yeah, Steve's right, you know, like, I shouldn't be doing this. And after that, like, they never got back together. It was just like, I'm gone. When this happened, my mom is a really, like, all the values I've learned in not, well, yeah. I'm going to say the majority, 90% of the values I learned in life, it's all my mom. Because she's a really kind person, and she cares about people, and she's always tries to be as positive and as hopeful as she can. And basically, my mom one time was in her car. She used to have this this big Isuzu, like Range Rover, basically, that eventually was going to be mine, but that car got destroyed, but that's another story. And it was she was there driving and with me and my sister, and all of a sudden when she's going near almost close to where we used to live, where we still live, I mean where my mom lives still over there. Basically, she saw two guys that live near the house, that they're like our neighbors from like a street down or so. And they were there waiting for a bus. And my mom stops and she goes, "Oh, you guys need a ride?" And they're like, yeah, we sure can use a ride, you know? And they get in the car. They get in the car and whatever. And my mom is giving them a ride. And my sister's there. And I'm there, and she's driving all normal and stuff. And we pass a couple lights down. We're about to make a left. And in that intersection, my dad's car comes in the picture. And he basically spots my mom's car, of course. They're really familiar with each other's cars. And My dad's mindset at this point is, this bitch is here, right? And my mom didn't even see him, but my dad's car came into place, and then he looks at the car and he sees two guys in the car. I don't believe he spots that me and my sister are in the car. I think he only spots my mom with two guys in the car. So my dad just gets furious and jealous, and I don't know what other things he got, and he just chases my mom's car and hits it continuously in all the ways he can. He hits my mom's car from multiple times. I thankfully didn't, I blacked out for maybe a couple of seconds or anything. And my sister really got it back, because my sister slammed her head in the window of the car. And it was a really bad scene. And basically we survived that. I would like to tell you what were my first words afterwards or anything like that, but I honestly can't remember right now. I remember just my dad getting extremely furious and just hitting the car constantly and many, many times. Like, that was just another scene from a movie, literally. Like, all these things, like, it's so crazy, because I've been wanting since a kid, like, my whole thing was like, oh yeah, like, I want my life to be like a movie, you know, that would be pretty cool. And actually, like, just thinking of all these things, it's kind of like a movie in a way, because it's like, it's a lot of impossible things that you don't even think. It's like, that's not real. And maybe some of you listeners are even skeptical of, like, oh, maybe that's not real. But this is actually everything that has happened in my life, and the ways that I actually survived. You know, a lot of things that I was supposed, air quotes, to be dead. That's basically one of the things that happened. When I was growing up. Another thing that happened, this was more during my, I was more of a teenager at this time. I was more between 13, 14, maybe 15 years old. My mom became both the dad and the mom in my family. And, I was very, very rebellious at this age. Just because, you know, it was like, oh, you know, I don't have a dad. I was in a really different phase of my life. Because I was like, I don't trust really religion, at least the church I was going. And I was just pissed off with school and girls and blah blah blah. And I was just frustrated with everything that was happening. And so my mom at this time, me and my mom fought a lot, like verbally, like crazy. Like she would go off on me, and I would go off on her, and it was crazy times, crazy times, one time, my mom went for like maybe 2 weeks, I would say. My mom would say, I will have like a water basically will be dripping every time it would rain in Puerto Rico, like water would be dripping from my ceiling. So we had to seal that fucking water drop thing. I don't know how it would really say it, put it in terms, but that's the best way I can describe it. Basically, water was coming from my ceiling, that it was already like in a puddle and the top of my roof. And you know, it was there was leakage there, so we had to seal it with basically, it's like if you were painting the roof, that's how you basically seal it. But you have to clean all that stuff, clean that puddle, you know, make it dry, and then actually, you know, put the thing on and blah blah blah. I didn't know to do none of these things as a child, so my mom wanted to do it, not do it. My mom wanted me to do it because my mom wanted me to fucking grow up and start doing things for my own self, so I'm not dependent on just her going like, "Hey, cook. Hey, do this for me. Hey, do this for me. Hey, do this," and I'm not that one of those kids. But I will constantly whine. I'm like, oh, I'm too busy. I can't do it today. Then 2 days after, oh, I'm too busy. I'll do it. I'll do it tomorrow for sure. I'm too busy. I'll do it next weekend. Oh, I'm too busy. Until it got to a point that my mom had it. She had enough of that. So it was like, I don't know, a Monday maybe. Nights, maybe 6 p.m. or so. It was already getting dark. My mom goes, Steve, like, go and basically seal the ceiling. Go to the roof and do it. And I'm like, no, I'll do it tomorrow. For sure, I'll do it tomorrow. No, you're doing it today. I'm sick and tired of your shit. Of you saying that you're not going to do it and blah, blah. You're going to do it right now. No. Back and forth. To a point that, you know, I have to give up. Like, it was going nowhere. So, you know, I lost the battle, basically. And my mom climbs through the roof with me, and she's teaching me how to do it. She's like, you do this, you do that, you do this, you do that, you do this, you do that, you do this, you do that. And I'm like, okay, fine. And then I'm like, you're gonna stay here? I'm like, no, I gotta, you know, I'm cooking and stuff. I gotta go with the food, okay. And then she climbs down the stairs and stuff, and she goes into the kitchen to like, you know, cook. And I'm there, you know, with my broom, just taking the puddle away, and trying to make it dry, and doing all these things, and trying to seal it. And then all of a sudden, by the way, I haven't told you this, guys. I used to live where my mom lives still there, but it's not quite like it was before. Back in the 80s, late 80s, all 90s and early 2000s, maybe, The place I lived in Puerto Rico, it's called Birdwing, and it's like a project. It's basically, if you think of California terms, like Inglewood, South Central, Compton, you know, those are, they call it the bad neighborhoods. So the neighborhoods, like, people are, like, you know, shooting all the time and doing all these things. So basically, I lived in one of those in Puerto Rico. And it was one of the really bad ones, especially at the time, because that time it was like the drug wars were fucking crazy and everybody wanted to be a mob boss. Like, I remember all my friends wanted to be either drug dealers or wanted to become like part of the mob or wanted to be, you know, just do crazy shit like that or sell drugs, whatever it was. So it was a really bad neighborhood. So hearing shots, for you guys, if you hear somebody shooting, like, in the air, pop, 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 maybe you guys will get really scared, some of you. Maybe some of you don't even care. But me, it was literally every night how I went to bed. Like, literally, that was, like, if I was going to, you know, that was my alarm clock, the thing that would tell me, go to bed right now. It would be gunshots. I would literally listen to gunshots every single day. And so I was there on the roof, and I hear gunshots. But these gunshots, I heard them really close. So it was a bit different, but I still didn't panic or anything because I already have heard so many. And then all of a sudden, I see a guy. And this guy, the thing that was striking about this guy is that he looked like Usain Bolt, like he was running for his life. And when I actually catched a glimpse of his actual face, he was covered in blood and just running. And he was passing like in front of my house. And I'm here in the roof, right between like a satellite dish and antenna, and me with a broom just cleaning this. And I see this man just running. And I hear more gunshots at this point. Pam, pam, pam. Stop, motherfucker. Stop, motherfucker. Somebody screaming. And then I see behind him, a couple yards behind him, a guy with a gun running and shooting at, like, after him. Like, this is stuff I'm telling you. I cannot make any of this stuff up because it's crazy the amount of things that I've seen and experienced in my life. And basically, this dude is just running for his life, and this guy is just shooting at it, and I'm literally just frozen, just staring at this crazy thing that's happening right in front of my eyes. And basically, the guy notices that he feels there's somebody, or he got a look with his peripheral vision or something, and he sees that there's somebody basically looking at him. So he looks to the right and he stares dead at my eyes, and I am basically there. He's still running and still chasing this guy, but he actually looks at me, points the gun at me, and shoots two times at me. People can say they will duck. People can say they will run away. But I'm telling you, I froze. I was there at the moment. I couldn't do anything. And the guy just kept going, trying to chase that guy. And at that moment, nothing happened to me. Absolutely no injuries. Absolutely anything. And so I'm there. I'm like, fuck. Am I dead or am I alive? Like, I cannot even tell. Because I just got shot at twice. And I can't believe twice missed me. Nothing, no wounds, nothing. And at that moment, I'm just frozen because I can't believe this. And my mom comes running, climbing up the stairs and grabs me by the shirt and swings me. And at that moment, I'm literally thinking, fuck, I just literally dodged. Well, nah, I didn't do anything. I just stood there. But I literally dodged two bullets at me. And now I'm going to die because my mom is, like, throwing me from the roof down. Like, I'm going to fall. I'm thinking I'm going to fall and crack my head or something. And I felt pretty bad, but just enough to get, like, a couple bruises just because my mom, you know, threw me from, like, you grab me from up there down the roof to the floor. And my mom goes, like, when you fucking hear guns, just go come in the house and whatever. And I'm like, you the one that told me to do the roof shit. Like, we just started fighting just because of that. I'm like, really? She's going to argue with me, and I was just about to be dead. I was just about to be dead, and she's going to argue with me now. Life. Life, right? Life. This episode is sponsored by Life. Not the board game, the real life. Oh, man. Yeah, man, and you know, after a while, I thought I was a badass, just because I survived death so many times. So I started to get, I was getting a little dangerous here and there, and then all of a sudden, you know, I had a bad thing. I used to, and I said this in the podcast before. I used to steal a lot, and the big moment for me was when I went to Boris Bookstore, and I actually was gonna steal a lot of DVDs and stuff, and I got caught by an undercover cop, and they were almost gonna send me to juvie. My mom was supposed to pay. It was still Rapture of Merchandise, so she was still had to pay like $400-something in DVDs that I basically ripped open and put it in my pocket or whatever I did. And basically my mom didn't have the money to pay $400 worth of DVDs because of things that I did. And the thing is, that's the only way I could get out, because if not, they will call authorities and send me to juvie. Then my dad came and actually stepped to the plate for the first time ever, and he paid the $400, et cetera, money. And then they both gave me a big speech that was the first time ever I seen both of them, like, team up and just go hard on me, or like, how of a stupid child I am, and how they have done so many things and sacrificed so many things for me, and I'm just throwing it away for doing shit like that. And I stopped, and I needed answers. I had to look for more. I needed answers to why am I acting such a way? Why I didn't understand myself. And so I dabbled into a lot of churches. I started going to a bunch of different churches. And I ended up finding a home still when I was raised Catholic. So I was still found a church that was Catholic, but it was a loose Catholic. Because the one I used to go back in the day was like a really old school one. Like, old people would go. It was literally one of those boring ones. But I found this one that was like a more hip one. Like, there were more young people than I ever seen in my life. And it was a cool one. And then I actually became one of the leaders of the youth groups that they had there. You know, the kids would come like every Friday, and we will have like, you know, dinner and activities, and we will do like Christian shit. And that's what we would do. And at one point, we did a thing that it was a retreat, basically. It was a weekend retreat, and we will go outside of town. That was like in Carolina, which is next to San Juan, if you're familiar with Puerto Rico. And we would go to Luquillo, which is like a couple of cities down, so a couple hours away. And we went there, and the thing that it's really striking about Luquillo in Puerto Rico is that there's a lot of big waves there. So if you're a hardcore surfer, boogie boarder, whatever you want to do, water that you need big waves, that's a great spot to go. Like, we went to Blue Beach, Playa Azul in Luquillo, and we were there, you know, chilling, and it's a big crowd of from church that they like to surf or boogie board. So I would go surfing and boogie boarding with them. I was really into, like, you know, sports and, just trying to see what can I do, you know, and because I love sports. I'm a big sports guy. I love playing sports in particular rather than watching it. So I would surf and I would do boogie boarding. And I remember when I was right there, I remember they said, Steve, you want to go swim for a little bit? You want to surf? Okay, have my board. So I would go in the actual sea. And I'm there, and I'm, you know, catching waves here and there and catching waves here and there. And I remember it clearly. I literally go in my brain, I go, okay, I'm going to catch two more, and that's it. I'm going to call it a day because I've been here for a long time. I've been here like an hour just catching waves or a couple hours catching waves. I'm like, I got to take a break. And I literally said that in my brain, and I remember it clearly because I clearly said it in my brain. And the first wave I catch was a stupid one. It just depleted right there. It wasn't that big of a deal, and it was just a baby, you know, baby little wave. And then the second one that I'm gonna catch is a big wave. The big wave, and I catch this wave, right? And I'm like, hell motherfucking yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, my board just goes opposite direction. I get caught in the wave, and the wave just eats me. And when the wave eats me, I get caught into a ravine. So at this point, my right hand goes into like a fist and goes, and this is ultimate, like this is not nothing I planned or anything. This is literally what happened to my body. Like my right hand goes into a fist and goes down, all the way down to the ground of the sea, like where the sand meets my hand. And it gets caught there. My body is spinning, except for my right hand that's just stuck to the sand, to the ground. Bam. My body is spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning. And then my left leg is going someplace else because it's attached to the board. So the board, I don't know where the board's at, but it's attached to my left leg. So my left leg is doing something else. My body's basically spinning, and my right arm is caught right down to like the sand. And in that very moment, I just let it happen. Because if you for any chance are caught in that type of stuff and you try to fight it, that's the worst mistake you could ever do. So I just let it happen. And after a little while, I don't know how long it was, maybe 30 seconds, maybe 45, maybe a minute, maybe a couple minutes. Who knows? I don't remember. But basically after that happened, I actually managed to like float up, you know, and get my head out. And I, you know, basically just started just going towards, you know, the shore. Like when I get out, actually to touch ground, I'm starting to get out. And when I actually get out, my head's out of the water. I only see white. I don't see that many shapes. I don't see the sky. I see the ground a tiny little bit, but I just see literally white. Like if somebody put literally a ton of pieces of white paper in my face and they're all bright. That's what I saw. But I knew I was still alive, and I knew I'm actually walking and I'm here. But that's all I saw. And then little by little, I can still hear. So I started to hear my friends. I started to hear people from church. And I just try to walk as much as I can to them. And I passed out, basically passed out on the ground. And they come to me, and ironically, all they had, they didn't even have water. Ironically, this is a church group, my friends, church group. And all they had were Coca-Colas and beer. So they came with Coca-Colas and beer and just pour it in my face. Just trying to wake me up and see that I'm all right and all this stuff. And basically I'm up, but I still can't see. So they carry me because I can't walk. And basically they go like, you want to go to a hospital? You want to go to a hospital? And I was saying, yes, yes, yes. At the moment, they literally opened the door of the car and they were going to put me in the car. I go like, no, I don't want to go to the hospital. And I go away. And they're like, why don't you want to go to a hospital? I'm like, I just don't want to go to a hospital. I never told them why I didn't want to go to a hospital. But the reason being is that I wasn't getting that many privileges as a kid just because I was so fucking mean and I was doing so many fucking dumb things before. And the whole stealing thing, you know, is like my mom just punished me like crazy. And shit, I still was trying to do my own thing, but, you know, after that, I try to change. And I said, this is the only fun thing I get to do is actually hang out with church people and do this. And I'm like, if my mom finds out that I went to fucking the hospital just because of this retreat that she's thinking I'm safe, she's going to have a heart attack. So that's why I refused, but I never really told them. And I said, I'll just walk it off. And I literally walked almost the entire beach and back. It took me like, maybe 2 hours. And literally after those 2 hours, I felt fine. And I went to check myself up, and I had some tissue tearing, and I broke ligaments and things like that. But it wasn't as severe, and I literally just walked it off. And I'm like, wow. And I literally, in that walk, I don't remember entirely everything I said, because I talked what people say, talking to myself or talking to God or whatever you guys believe. That's what I did. I was just talking out loud like a crazy person. I don't remember everything that I said, but I remember clearly saying, and that's the last time I surf. And that's the last time I surf, sir. And I haven't done it ever since. People tell me, like, hey, come and do it. I'm like, no, I'm cool. I'm here. I'll watch you. I'll record you if you want. Like, I don't want to fuck around with that. And yeah, man, it's crazy. It's crazy. And just life is crazy. Life, honestly, you never know what you're going to expect. There's things that get thrown at your way left and right, and there's things like that you absolutely don't expect, when you can say, like, in your head, this is the last wave I'm going to catch. Literally, that was the last wave I catched ever. Because after that, I said, I'm not going to do it. Fuck that shit. You know, after that, I graduated high school. I went to college. I went to Santa Fe College in Gainesville, Florida, and I went to University of Florida State College, and I got a scholarship, and I actually came to California, and I went to AMDA, the American Musical Dramatic Academy. I met tons of people there, and then I dropped out, and I started doing my own thing, and now, fast forward to here, I'm 3 years in L.A., I've been doing TV commercials, some films here and there, and many things, and I took some time off on specifically on stand up, so I can focus on improv, because I knew my improv game was weak, so I needed to level that shit up. So I started taking classes. I can see the Groundlings, UCB, doing all these things, doing the whole acting move thing, hustling hard, started my podcast, doing all these things. Got back to stand up, really happy. I was still doing some old material and holding really dearly to me. And then little by little, you know, getting the courage and getting it right, I started being just myself there. And I literally can stand up and just talk like I'm talking to you guys right now. And I'm cool with it. Like, I'm fine with it. As long as people are getting entertained in some type of way, I'm fine with that. At the end, I want to make you laugh. But in the podcast, I'm talking to you right now. And fast forward, and then we come to last Sunday, two Sundays ago, I would say. It was Flappers Comedy Club, and I had a show that my good friend Angie Grace was hosting, and she kindly asked me many, many times. She asked me like 7 times, dude. I kid you not. Like, are you sure you can do my show? Are you sure you can do my show? Are you sure? And I always say yes, 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 yes. Because to a friend, I always say yes. I'm always available to a friend, you know, to a dear friend of mine. And I didn't even realize that day was actually Super Bowl night. So I kind of wanted to watch the Super Bowl, kind of. Just because of the commercials, I was really hyped. And I wanted to see the Bruno Mars performance. Because I like his music, and I don't care what y'all guys say, okay? So fuck y'all. No, but I like his music, and I want to see if he did good, and he did amazing. So I was like, damn, I got to go to Flappers. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And I did the podcast. If you guys listen to the podcast right before this podcast, that was the podcast that I did before the whole mess that happened last Super Bowl. I go to Flappers Comedy Club, and I'm there, and we all talking with each other and just getting ready for the show. And I meet this comedian, her name is Lydia, and she's this Palestinian girl, and that she's doing stand-up, and she's been doing stand-up. She says that she has been doing stand-up since I started, basically. I started doing stand-up for real skis in 2009 in Florida. That's when I did my first ever stand-up, like officially English stand-up performance. But I've been performing since 5th grade. So I've been doing this for a long time, guys. But she tells me that she's been doing that for a long time, from 2009, and she took like a long time off, and now, you know, she's getting back into it because she really loves stand-up. So she's there telling me jokes and just telling me what should she fix and what should she do this here and there. And since she gave me that liberty, I don't like giving notes to people, because whatever you want to do is your thing. I'm not here to criticize you. I'm here to do my thing, and I'm here to appreciate your thing, you know? But if you give me that leeway of like, hey, criticize me, or give me a note here, or tell me this, or how can I make this joke funnier if you don't mind, then I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll help you. I'm all about just helping people out, you know? And basically, we go to the green room, and she tells me some jokes, and I help her some jokes here, and I say, hey, if you do this in your act out, it would be better, or if you do this or that or whatever. And she's like, thank you, you're really, like, man, thank you for letting me pick your brain, you know, and all that. I'm like, yeah, sure, at any time, man. And we are going to proceed to do the show, and then we got word that the show was going to get canceled. Oh, the show got canceled, actually. And we go like, why? Because there are no people. Because everybody's just watching the Super Bowl. So everybody's in the comedy club is basically the comedians, or the people that are in the actual comedy club and just regular audience. They're in the main room, not in the usual room. That's the second room where we're going to be performing. So they would get canceled the show. And I go and ask them and the staff and all that, and I'm like, what are you guys going to do with the room? And they're like, well, we're going to just close it down until the next show. And I'm like, when's the next show? Between 9 and 9:30. And I'm like, it's 7 o'clock right now. Fuck that. I'm going to use that room. And basically, I got the room. And I said, to any comedian that wants to come and do, you know, basically material, come fucking do material and just workshop it. It doesn't matter. I mean, just going to be a room full, a room with just a few comedians, but still, it's a room, you know? And I already made the drive and everything. So everybody just did their set. I was actually going to be in the actual official show. I was going to open. Angie told me if I wanted to open, I wanted to be first. Because I'm a veteran, you know? I'm a little veteran comedian. Not really. I'm a comedian. I've been doing it for a while, so sort of. I'm still an amateur in the pro people life, like people, you know, big, big, big and famous. But I've been doing this for a while, guys. No, but basically, I got bumped. I got bumped to headline, basically, because everybody just went first. And they were like, well, does anybody want to go? I'm like, dude, I want to go up. Like, I'm the one that did the effort to even put the show together. Like, at the end when it got canceled. And he's like, well, ladies and gentlemen, Steve Dash, and I got on stage. And sometimes I don't, but sometimes I do, to record my shows. And that night, two big things happened in death, the topic of death that day. One was Luis Raul, and he's a stand-up comedian from Puerto Rico. And the other one is Philip Seymour Hoffman, beloved actor worldwide. And I talked about both of those things on stage. And I actually want to, I don't even want to talk about it. I want you guys to hear it from my own mouth. I'm just going to talk. I'm not going to put the whole thing because I don't want you guys to hear my bits. I'm just going to put the parts that I think are pretty shocking about the things that I said. And it's about their death. And I talk a little bit about my death. Foreshadowing. Listen up.
Two people pass away. I got to talk about that. Nobody talked about that. Really important people. I'm going to talk about the first guy. Philip Seymour Hoffman died. OD'd. Yeah. Yeah, he was a big addict with heroin and stuff. And it's sad, man, because he was, what, 46? 46. Young man. He has so much talent to give out, and it's sad, man. It's really depressing. And then another guy, which I know y'all are not familiar with him, his name is Luis Raul. He's basically the Richard Pryor of stand-up comedy in Puerto Rico. And that dude, he died at the age of 50, I think 54. He just died the same day. He died at midnight. Silly Philip Seymour Hoffman died, like, in the morning or in the afternoon?
I think it's 11.
11, something like that, yeah. And, man, it's sad, because it's like, whoa, like, two people, bang, like, for me, Luis Raul, like, you know, he had more years to go, and Philip Seymour Hoffman as well, you know, he had more years. Just to show you that you have to do whatever you want to do and enjoy this life as much as you can, because you don't know.
So there, I talked, I talked about more about Luis Raul than Philip Seymour Hoffman, because Philip Seymour Hoffman, it's known... in the world where everybody knows about Philip Seymour Hoffman. But Luis Raul is a really, really beloved comedian of mine. Like, he was one of my biggest inspirations, especially because he made it in a market that is not even a market. So whatever Richard Pryor did in the United States of America back in the day, which is, it was bigger in a way because Luis Raul was never excluded. Richard Pryor made it in a world that white America... you know, look down on Black America. So that's a little bit more impressive. But still, in Puerto Rico, there's not really a market. There's not really a comedy club. If anybody wants to do comedy, they have to make their way or find their way because there's not really a place you can go and actually do it or perform. So he just made it big, stand-up comedy. Every time he would do a show, he will pack it. And so that's why it was really important for me to just... tell everybody about his death, you know, because it just meant so much to me, as much as Philip Seymour Hoffman also meant a lot to me and meant a lot to a bunch of people that really enjoyed his acting. And I'm just talking about this because there's many ways that I got to tell you guys that you have to be doing what you love doing, because again, you could have the story that I've been having, that I've been, like, you know, busting my ass and doing a lot of things. And then all of a sudden, you know, in just a blink of an eye, your life can change. You can have a bad surfing accident, or you can have, you know, somebody shooting at you. Like, you don't know. Things happen in life, and you just got to enjoy it. So I'm going to continue playing the recording so you can hear what I say, because after all, it's a comedy club and I got to make some jokes. And I know some of you are going to look at me sour or when you hear the next jokes I'm going to say, because it's a little darker. But listen.
I don't know when you're going to go. And that's why I decided I'm going to quit watching porn. Like, I'm absolutely done with it. Just because I refuse to die, and I'm, like, just, like, in the corner, just, you know, just... Oh, no, death! Ah! And I'm just there, just staring at porn. Like, it's ridiculous, because I'm a guy, and like, you know, all of y'all, you know, were born when technology wasn't as, you know, overwhelming.
Okay, that's what I'm going to say some bits there, but I'm just going to skip through all that. Because those are bits and bits and bits. And I just want you to get to the core, the chewy part. Not go through the crust. You know, everybody hates the crust. Everybody wants that meaty part, you know? I'm talking about pizza now. Okay, listen up.
Caught there. Like, I just can't do it. It's not right. So I've been thinking of what ways I want to go since, you know, that might come soon. Who knows? Maybe after this show. It's like, this is my last show, guys. This is my last show, and I performed for 4 people. Packed house. Great memories. So I've been planning my death. Let me see. What way do I really want to go? Like, I've been thinking.
All right, and that's where I'm going to stop, because then I go through bits and stuff. And if you guys want to hear those bits, just come and see me live, because I don't want to just put my bits out there. Oh, might as well. I just put the bits. You know what? I'll put it. I don't care. You guys are cool. I'm going to put the bit. Yay, Steve, that's going to put the bit. Okay.
I don't want to. I've been thinking I wanted to go out by sleeping. But then I realized that's not the perfect way to go down. Because what about if I'm sleeping and I'm caught in a nightmare? Like, for example, I'm in a room and there's a guy there. Like, just in the bathroom for a long time, and I'm just waiting, and I need to pee real bad, and I'm dead now, and I'm stuck in that dream. Like, dude, hurry up! I need to get in! Oh my God, am I dead? Oh, this is a dream. Let me wake up. Steve, wake up! Hey, Steve, wake up! Oh shit, I'm dead! I'm stuck! Okay, I'll work with that a little bit more. I mean, it's just improv that I did. No, but then I was thinking, I want to die having sex. But then I thought, like, that will freak the girl out. Like, imagine if I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, my God, what happened? What? I killed him. My pussy is a killer. My pussy is a killer. So if I'm going to go out like that, I definitely want to surprise somebody. I want to go out the biggest way possible. And since this is off my bucket list, I always wanted to go to the countdown, you know, in New York City. You guys got to bear with me. You got to help me, you know, establish this image. So we're all in the New York City Times Square ball. It's about to drop. 20 seconds goes down, and we're getting ready. We're holding hands together. And now count with me. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Oh, not. Y'all, I think he really did.
Oh my God! What the fuck happened? What the fuck? Oh my God! Now the people kissing. Oh my God! There's a dead person here. Oh my God! It's all over the news. That's the way I want to go.
All right, so that was the bits. Just so you guys, you know, get the little aftertaste afterwards. I wasn't trying to be just shocking and whatever. I was just trying to inform everybody about a topic, and that was the topic of, you know, two big stars, idols of mine, died, and just saying, so I like to stay in that same room. I like to talk about that particular subject, then that's how I turned it into comedy. I know a lot of y'all are gonna be like my girlfriend, don't you ever talk about that ever again on stage, because that's what happens. I'm like, dude, it happened because it happened. So basically, I talked about that. And the thing that's really striking about everything that I said, you can say anything about my jokes or anything about anything. I was literally just improvising everything that I was talking that day. And it was that I said, this could be my last show. This could be my last show, packed house, four people in the audience. And I said it as a joke. But I didn't know I was actually going to really be thinking about that thing that I particularly said on stage. Because after that, every Sunday I have improv practice with my main team, my first team, Eldon Farlow. I was already too late for practice because I did the show and the show got out like at 10 or so p.m. So I was already late and I was already in Burbank, California. It would take me a while to get there. So comedians said, hey, I am hungry. We're hungry. Let's go have something to eat. And I'm like, sure, let's go. I'm down. So we go to In-N-Out Burger that's near Flappers Comedy Club. And we go and we have burgers and I had a strawberry shake. And then afterwards, some comedians, Lydia said, like, hey, do you want to write some jokes? Like, help each other with some jokes. I can probably help you with your bits. You can help me with my bits. I'm like, yeah, sure. Hell yeah. Like, more work, more comedy. Hell yeah. I want to do that. I love doing this. Like, this is my favorite thing to do ever. And we got into the car. I got in my car. She got in her car. Angie got in her car. And then when we are in the freeway, the whole thing happened. Bam, drunk driver here. Bam, car starts spinning. Airbag exploded. I lose consciousness. Car's destroyed. And when I come back to consciousness, because I before, when my car was spinning and the airbag exploded, I had literally point maybe 7 seconds of consciousness, and all that came to my mind, absolutely everything that came to my mind, they say at that moment your life flashes through your eyes, or you think of something really deep or whatever. I literally didn't think of nothing deep. I didn't think of any relatives. I didn't think of my girlfriend. I didn't think of absolutely nothing. All I thought about was, this is it. Literally Michael Jackson's movie. This is it. Like, That's all that came to my mind. I'm like, this is it. I'm dead. I'm gone. And I black out. And when I come back, I have my hands crossed between me. And I see open wounds. I see a lot of open wounds in my hands and arms. I'm really shaky and I cannot really feel myself entirely. I can't move. And then after a couple minutes, I actually had some movement. So I take off my seatbelt and I get out the car. And I'm there and I can't really walk. I'm really dizzy and nauseous and just a combination of many things. Hurt. Devastated, disappointed, many things. And a dude comes and he goes like, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And then another guy comes by and he starts telling me, he starts checking my pulse and he starts saying, do you have anything to drink? And I'm like, no. And if it was me, like if I was actually me, Steve Desperes, and like me, if it wasn't like a serious issue, I'd probably say, well, I had a strawberry shake, and joke around like that. But this wasn't a moment for joking. And I sat down and there, and he said, paramedics, police officers, and firefighters are on their way. And I recall that it was pretty quick that they came by. The cops got my story. Then apparently there was another accident prior to my accident with that same drunk driver. So I don't know if it was that he was coming out of, in not the opposite direction of traffic or what it was. But I won't know until the full police report's on my hands. They check on me. They say if I wanted to go to the hospital, and I refused just because I felt good enough to still carry myself around. And I wanted to get informed with absolutely everything that I can do, that everything I can do in my power to make this right, you know, because I almost lost my life, which I'm glad I didn't. But I lost my car, and that's basically how I get around. That's all I have. And transportation wise, I mean, I can live cool now, like walking around whenever. Well, now I can't, but I just needed to get answers, you know? So I immediately, I called my mom just to get her informed with everything that happened. And my mom is just in shock, because first, it's really late for her. It's only 4 hours of difference. It happened by the time the cops and all of them were there. It was probably, 12:01 maybe in the morning. So in Puerto Rico, it was like 5 in the morning at this time. So it was crazy. It was crazy news for her. And she's like, I'm going to be, she's like, go to the doctor right now. Go to the ER right now. And I'm going to be in LA tomorrow. But in reality, my mom cannot fly because right now she's finished. She's still doing radiotherapy because she has cancer. It's coming down. She just has, like, I think it's 4 more sessions, and she's going to be completely done, hopefully. And because she was already supposed to be done, but she has, like, 4 more sessions, and that's it, apparently. But she can't fly because of that. And so in reality, that's not true. I said, listen, mom, I'm trying to calm her down. I'm like, I'm okay. I'm talking to you right now. I can talk. So I'm talking to you. I told you everything that happened. I'm going to talk to the cops. The cops are going to tell me what to do, and we'll figure it out. And if anything, I'll go to the hospital. And then after all that, I will go to the hospital. I promise you. Okay. Tell the cops, they told everything, and then after, I just went home, because I was so in shock, like, my body was still shaking, I was so in shock, that I didn't particularly feel a lot of things. Like, I can feel my wounds when I see them, but if I'm not looking at them, I can't feel anything, because I'm just still in a state of shock, and everything I'm thinking is just the accident. It's like if I have PTSD or something like that. And so I decide to go to my house and sleep, try to sleep, with Panel PM or something. When I wake up, now I can feel, and I can feel a lot. And so I go to the emergency room, and they check on me, and they do all this stuff. And I got a couple broken bones in my left arm, and I had an open wound, so they gave me a tetanus shot. They didn't say really anything about my head. Which I told him, like, you know, my neck and my back and this and that, whatever. But they were really, I don't know if they didn't have the equipment or what it was, but they were really not that, they were helpful, but they could have been, like, a step above, just a little bit more. But they took, overall, they took pretty good care of me. And
And basically, they couldn't put a cast on me because my arm was really swollen. So they put like a splint on me, and they told me to keep my, you know, my arm elevated and all that. And yeah. And then a couple of days later, they said that my ear ringing, because I had a really bad ear ringing in my left ear, and my head and all my neck stuff and my back, those things will get a little more intense the next day, but then after what, it should be going away. But it was just getting more intense and more intense and more intense, to the point that I had to go to this other ER, and then they scanned my head, and then they told me, yeah, I had a concussion. I still had, they took more x-rays, and I had, like, my wrist was broken, and, like, my thumb, out of everything, is, like, really bad, in bad shape. So they do more things on me, they take blood on me, and they do more things with me, more those science experiments. And then I go to the orthopedic on Sunday, and they were gonna put a gigantic cast on me. But since I was having mobility of my wrist and all that, the only thing I really could move was, and I'm still recovering, is my thumb, because I messed it up really bad. I cannot put my thumb straight. So they're gonna put a gigantic cast that we're gonna put in place. But since every little mold that they had was either too big or too small for my own finger. So they had to do a new one, but that would take hours to make. So they basically did the whole, like, with a metal thing, and they had to, like, stretch out my my thumb, which was so painful. They had to do all these things. But again, I already been through experiences that I broke bones, that I was pretty familiar with it, and I'm like, yeah, I can totally do this, man. And you know how many times I survived? You know how many times I was supposed to be dead and I'm here? Like, because for example, when I was talking to the cops at the accident, the cops say, you're really lucky, man. You're supposed to be dead. Basically, that's what they said. And at the ER, at least the first one that I went to, they said the exact same thing. And I was pretty calm for that. And then when I reviewed my life, like I'm doing with you guys, that I had all these experiences that led me up to this, to now where I'm at. It's crazy. It's crazy how life can just change in just a matter of seconds. 1 second, you're having the best time of your life, hanging with the best people you could ever find. And in another second, you're basically, were almost about to die, and your car gets destroyed, and just because one dude got crazy on Super Bowl night and decided to drink and drive. I'm not an advocate of drinking and driving. I actually myself drink extremely less. Like, if I drink ever, it's like twice a year. So I basically don't drink. And I'm just going to tell you, it's not just about drinking and driving. It's about texting and driving. It's about doing a bunch of other bullshit rather than paying attention to the road. And I'm just saying, I could have been gone because of that. I'm very fortunate, and I know I'm very lucky to be alive. And I'm very lucky I still get to do this amazing podcast that I love doing. And I get to do everything that I absolutely get to do. In that very moment that I realized that I was going to die, and all I said was, this is it. I said it very confident. You know why?
because even though I know there's many things I want to do and I'm definitely going to do now that I get the chance to still be with you guys, is that I would have died happy in the sense of like I was really, really proud of absolutely everything and anything that I've accomplished. Even at that moment, what I was doing was stand-up comedy. One of the thing that I love the most out of life, and that's stand-up. It's art. It's the first thing that turned me into anything that I wanted to do. When I saw Richard Pryor for the first time, when I saw Dave Chappelle or George Lopez or George Carlin, all these people, I'm like, I want to do that. That's what I want to do. And I actually did it that specific night that the accident happened. And a week later, I did a show at the Ice House. And that's the shout out that I gave right at the beginning of this podcast. And it was an amazing, amazing show. And the show, I talked about the accident. I talked about my experience going to all these medics. And I talked about how crazy speedy of a recovery I've had, which is insane because, you know, if you see the way my car is totaled, literally looks like people died there. And just the fact that I'm still able to walk, I'm still able to talk, I'm still able to breathe, I'm still able to, you know, jam with you guys right now. You know, I still got to do physical therapy tomorrow. And I still got a broken thumb. But to say that I am still here with you guys, like, it's amazing. It's just a miracle. It's just a blessing. And I'm going to keep doing this, guys. Don't believe that because of this, I've changed in a major way. Yes, I have maybe a tiny thing here or a tiny thing there that I maybe did bad or wrong or something like that. But for the majority of the things that I do, it's always good. It's always kind. And for now on, it's like 300% positive, dude. So there's more Steve Dish your way. Don't be afraid. I'm the same dude. And yeah, I just wanted to keep you guys up to speed of what was happening. So, man, if you think a cat is impressive because a cat has 9 lives, guess what, bitches? Steve Des got 6 lives and counting. I might have more. Who knows? What's going to be my nearest, closest to death experience? I don't know, man. Anything can happen. So I'm just happy that I'm alive. I'm happy that I'm with y'all. So there's going to be plenty more comedy coming your way. There's going to be plenty of more podcasting. There's going to be plenty of more Steve Des. Until the day I die, and I can promise you that, because I've been in the face of death many times, and I'm still here, okay? So, nothing, guys. I absolutely love you. Tell everyone you love, your closest friends, your family, everybody. Just tell them you love them. Give them a big kiss. Give them a big hug for me and for yourself. I tell my girlfriend every single day that I love her. I tell my mom that I love her, and I'm telling my friends that I love them every single time. Because at the end, that's what you want. You want to say, I love you, because you love them. They're in your life for something, okay? So say that. Be positive, stay positive, and keep it going, man. Because you're not dead. You're still alive, so you can do absolutely everything and anything you set your mind to. I know it, and you know it, okay? So don't be lazy and get crazy. Do things. I don't know what I'm rhyming. I'm rhyming like insanely right now. But yeah, guys, I'm just happy to be with you guys. I'm happy to be alive. And yeah, guys, I'll see you on the next Steve Des Island podcast.
You've been listening to the Steve Des Island podcast. Be sure to visit stevedes.com for more information about this episode, as well as past and future episodes. Rate and review this episode on iTunes. Don't forget to follow Steve Des on Twitter at SteveDesTV and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/SteveDesShow. See you next time.